Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Hey, Lockie, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I've had the worst morning. Honestly, I don't even know where to start. You know what my problem is? And this is my New Year's resolution, because Happy New Year to everyone, because we're dropping on New Year's Day. I say yes to everything, and it's really gotten me like a stick in the mud at the moment. I am struggling.
Such a yes man.
Yeah, I literally say yes to everything. And today I was going to have the day off, but we're just so busy at work. So I'm sort of doing like a half day. And I've been running around. I've been at the shops. I had a list of things, and I'm not kidding you. I had five things to get at Chadston. Three of them were sold out. Now I've got to go to other places to get them. And I'm just like that. And then obviously, I was a bit thrown off because we don't usually record during the week, and I left my laptop at Tony's. I was not even thinking this morning. So I left my laptop there. I've gone to use my work laptop, and yesterday when I was in the office, I changed my password. And Lockie, because I changed my password in the office, because I use the same sort of password, I think we've spoken about this before, like I just change a few letters around, it kept saying like, sorry, this one's, you've used this one previously. It's too similar to something you've used previously. So God knows what I changed it to, what actually went through in the end. And then I've logged on at home, which is I've used the old password, because that's what you got to do, you know, until it like talks to each other.
Yeah.
And then, Lockie, once it's connected to the system, it's changed back to the old password, which I don't know what it was. So poor IT. I feel like I'm on their hit list today.
Oh, well, that's what they're there for, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But, yes. So that's my morning. How are you going?
It's my last day of work today. And I was hoping to finish relatively early, but I don't know if that's going to happen anymore.
Oh.
I just checked my emails before. But anyway, I will try my best. But after today, I'm done for a few weeks, which will be nice.
And yeah, I'm off for a few weeks too.
Yeah. You finish tomorrow?
Yes, I finish tomorrow, so
yeah,
one day to go. Yeah,
cool.
I don't know. We're in a rush. Maybe we should get into this week's episode.
Yeah, let's get into it. Similar to last week, although I'm in charge this week, it is a case that Karina doesn't know about, so it's all going to be a bit of a surprise. And I specifically picked this one because I thought it would really freak her out a bit. So,
ooh. Well, I'm gonna have so many questions. I'm just gonna be like, "Lock away." I'll try not to ask them any.
All right, so if you're ready, let's get into it.
Let's do it, Lockie.
The Idaho Supreme Court upholds a murder conviction from Bannock County, but not without some disagreement. Good evening and thanks for watching tonight. I'm Tom Blackington. Today, the Idaho Supreme Court rejected the appeal of Tory Adamczyk, upholding his convictions in the 2006 murder of Cassie Jo Stoddard. Our Logan McDougall is following the story for us today, and he joins us now from our Pocatello newsroom. So, Logan, what did the high court find here?
Todd, in a 3-2 decision, the Idaho Supreme Court affirmed Adamczyk's convictions for first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Now, Adamczyk's attorneys argued for an appeal based on seven different points, which included whether there was sufficient evidence for the jury to find beyond a reasonable doubt that Adamczyk murdered Stoddard, if the jury had been properly instructed, and whether the sentences imposed were unreasonable or cruel because of Adamczyk's minor status at the time the crimes occurred. In the majority opinion, Justice Jones says there was substantial evidence in the record upon which a jury could reasonably conclude, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Adamczyk was guilty of first-degree murder. Jones also states that the theories presented to the jury by the prosecution were adequately described in the jury instructions provided in this case. Those instructions required the jury to find that Adamczyk engaged in conduct which caused Stoddard's death. And in response to the claims of unreasonable or cruel and unusual punishment, Jones says, in light of the excessively heinous nature of the crime committed here, the premeditated and calculated stabbing of a friend for the apparent purpose of gaining fame as a serial killer, this court finds that Adamczyk has failed to demonstrate a clear abuse of discretion by the district court. Now, coming up tonight on KPVI News 6 at 10, we'll speak to attorneys on both sides of this case to get their opinions on today's decision and also look into the dissenting opinions of the court's decision. Todd, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Logan McDougall.
All right. So today we are talking about the murder of Cassie Jo Stoddart. And I came across this case on TikTok.
Oh.
Shocker. And I just feel like, Karina, for you, like, obviously you don't know what is happening and I haven't given you any information or anything, but I feel like this is everyone's worst nightmare.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Especially yours. So I'm what hoping it kind of really makes you feel uncomfortable.
Adds to my day.
Exactly right. So Cassie Jo Stoddart was born December the 21st, 1989. She was the middle child of two siblings. Christy was her older sister, and she had a younger brother named Andrew. Her family lived in Pocatello, Idaho, which is the fifth largest city in Idaho and has a huge Mormon population. By all accounts, her family were very loving. They were kind and they enjoyed spending time together as a family. Cassie was described by her brother Andrew as headstrong and a role model, and he really looked up to her. Cassie was intelligent, ambitious, and she did plan to attend college when she finished high school one day. She enjoyed art and music and would spend hours in her room drawing and listening to music and just chilling out. She had lots of friends, she rarely got in trouble, and she was a straight A student. Like, she was really like a model citizen. At the time of her death, Cassie was only 16 years old, and she was a typical teenager. She had a boyfriend. His name was Matt Beckham, and they had been together for about 5 months. On Friday, the 22nd of September, 2006, Cassie attended school that day. It was a Friday, and it was described by all other students as an average day. Cassie's mother, Anne, picked her and Matt up from school that day at about 3:45 p.m., and she dropped Cassie and Matt at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house because Cassie was house-sitting for her aunt and uncle that weekend. And her aunt and uncle's house was a pretty remote property in Idaho. So like I mentioned, Cassie was house-sitting for her aunt and uncle that weekend, and her boyfriend Matt had planned to come and spend Friday night with her just watching movies and things like that.
Mm. Sounds fun.
Yes. So while they were there, two of Matt's friends from school, Brian and Tori, stopped by at the house to watch a movie with their friends, and they watched Kill Bill.
Oh, my God.
Not that that really matters. It was a detail that most people knew, so I popped it in there.
Yeah.
So just before 9:30 p.m., Brian and Tori left, and they told Cassie and Matt they were just going to go and see a movie. Cassie's mum checked in at about 9:30 p.m. that night. She just gave Cassie a call, and Cassie just told her her and Matt were just watching movies and she will check in with her mum the following day. At around 10 p.m. that night, the electricity and all the lights in the house suddenly went off, and then they flicked back on again. Like, it was like a on-off type of situation.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So Matt went to see if he could find the cause of the outage, but he couldn't see anything. And at this point, Cassie was pretty scared, and she asked Matt if he could spend the night with her because she was, a bit afraid. So Matt,
he was going to go home.
He was going to go home. He was just coming to watch movies. And because the lights went out, Cassie was freaked out, and she said, like, can you please stay the night with me? So he called his mum and asked, said, Cassie's really freaked out. Do you mind if I stay the night? But his mum said no, which is completely understandable. And she came and picked Matt up at about 10 p.m. And
she's 16, did you say?
16, yeah.
My gosh, that is so scary. Yeah.
Yeah, remote property, the lights are going off, and her boyfriend left. And Matt's mum did say to Cassie, like, because the power's off. Like, do you want to come and stay at our place?
Yeah.
But she said no because she felt like she had a duty. She was meant to house sit her aunt and uncle's house. She felt like she had a duty to stay. And they had animals that she was watching as well at the same time. So she turned the offer down.
Okay.
When Matt left, he also called his friend Tori that was there earlier in the night. And he just said, you know, I'm just letting you know I've left. Like, so don't come back and hang out later because I'm not going to be there.
Why would he do that though? Because it's his friend. Yeah.
It's his friend. Yeah. So they, I think they'd come over and then they'd gone to the movies and maybe the plan was that they were going to come back and hang out. But he rang and said, I've left. So I'm not there anymore. So don't bother coming back.
Okay.
So Cassie is now alone in the pitch black house. Shortly after Matt had left, after his mum had picked him up, two people emerged from the basement and walked up the basement stairs. The pair was dressed in all black and were both wearing white scream masks.
Oh my goodness, Lockie.
Cassie was stabbed 29 times with two hunting knives and almost half of those wounds were fatal. Cassie died at the scene. On Sunday, the 24th of September, Cassie's aunt and uncle and her 13-year-old cousin returned from their trip and the 13-year-old cousin ran into the house excitingly to see her cousin Cassie and discovered Cassie dead in a pool of her own blood.
Oh my God. Wait, can I ask something? Sorry. How do we know they're wearing scream masks? Will we find out later?
We'll find out, yeah.
Okay.
And so, yeah, Cassie wasn't discovered until the Sunday. So Matt, the boyfriend, had said that he tried to call her on the Saturday but didn't get through, but didn't think too much of it. So, yeah, she was discovered on the Sunday by her aunt, uncle and her cousin.
But, you know, a Saturday, and if he's nearby, why aren't they hanging out on, like on a Saturday?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and like, my kind of question as well is, like, the mum, like, I wonder if the mum had tried to call her as well.
She's
16 years old.
Like, yeah, she totally, I feel like, would have called her at least to check in. And she's at a remote property. The thing I find the weirdest is that the boyfriend didn't want to see her on the Saturday when he wanted to when he wanted to sleep over on the Friday night.
Yeah, yeah. So in the beginning of the investigation, Matt was obviously the prime suspect as he was the last to see Cassie alive. During his initial interview, he noted to police that Brian and Tori, his friends from school, had visited them that night but left to go to the movies. At this time, Matt did a polygraph test, which he passed with flying colours. Mm. And obviously because his mum had come and picked him up, his story checked out and he was no longer a suspect. So police then moved on to Brian and Tori because they were then the next people to see Cassie that night. So they went and questioned Brian. Brian had said that him and Tori had visited the home that night expecting a party, but when they arrived, realized no party was taking place, they decided that they would just go and see a movie on their own, and then they left. After the movie, they reportedly hung out at Brian's house together that night.
What could the motive be? Like, it has to be. Was anything stolen?
No.
Wow. Okay, so it's definitely relating to her. All right.
So the police then questioned Tori. He had a similar story that they'd left to go to this apparent party, which didn't happen. So then they went to the movies that he also kind of elaborated and said when they got to the movies, the original movie that they wanted to see wasn't playing. So they decided that they weren't going to see a movie and they left, or it was getting a bit like the waters were getting a bit muddy here.
So sus already. Okay.
So they bring Brian back in for questioning and he stuck to his original story that they, you know, went to the movies and that was that, not a crazy night. Brian then tells police that him and Tori were actually stealing things from the movie theater car park. That's why they were being a bit funny, because they didn't want to get in trouble for stealing things from cars.
You know, people do this, Lockie. They tell you a little crime to sort of thinking that psychologically, oh, they dubbed themselves in for this crime, but they're really covering a bigger crime.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. So police, however, aren't convinced for that exact reason that you just mentioned. So they end up searching Brian's house. They have enough evidence at this point to search his home. And in this search, it's revealed that they find, an empty knife sheath, like one of those things that knives sit in. Brian was again brought in for questioning, obviously, to ask about this knife sheath, and he admitted that he and Tori had unlocked the basement door of the aunt and uncle's home so that they could break into the house later that night. But Brian has said they only did this because they wanted to scare Cassie. He did tell police that they bought masks, gloves, black clothing, and knives to assist them, knowing how scared Cassie would be with all of that stuff happening.
This is the stupidest confession I've ever heard.
What? Yeah, and it didn't end there. So he then told investigators that once they went upstairs, that Tori was the one that started to stab Cassie. And Brian had believed that Tori had started doing this just to try and scare him. But as soon as Brian realized what was actually happening, that Tori was actually killing her, he said that he never touched her, he never stabbed her, that it was all Tori and he watched. He also had claimed that earlier that day, Tori had threatened to kill him if he spoke of their plan to break into this house and scare Cassie. And he really did this to save himself. Like, he was really throwing Tori under the bus in these interviews. But Brian did agree to the police that he would show the investigators where they hid all of their stuff from the night. So the police, Brian, and Brian's father went to Black Rock Canyon, and Brian led them to a site where police recovered all of this evidence that they had buried. And I'm going to read out what they had. So police recovered a box of matches, a melted hydrogen peroxide bottle, a pair of blue gloves, a pair of black boots, a pair of fingerless gloves, a multicolored mask, one dagger-style knife with a sheath, one silver and black-handled knife, one small dagger type knife again with a sheath, a Sony videotape, a black-handled serrated knife, a partially burnt piece of paper, one red and white mask, one single black glove, and a pair of partially burned black Puma gloves. Wait, there's more, sorry. A blue plastic garbage bag, a partially burned black long sleeve t-shirt, a Calvin Klein shirt, a white and grey sock, and a small piece of black, like, cord or string. This is all the stuff that they buried, right?
What? This is so premeditated. One. And two, is all this stuff just relating to this one crime, or have they been doing other shit?
Yes. Oh. So, with this evidence, police then bring Tori back in for his second interview, and he reiterated his original story that they went to the movies. Police then let him know of all of the evidence that they had found, and they just told him to be honest. Like, we've got all this evidence. They actually had been to the movie theater, and, there's no evidence of them even being at the movie theater. They'd obviously found everything, and they said, like, you just need to be honest now. It was at this point that Tori asked for a lawyer, and he went and spoke to his father in private at the station. And then when he returned from speaking to his dad, they immediately arrested him. Investigators then questioned Brian again, and they do this because they're not really sure how Brian fits into it all, because really, like, he's just saying he was there and he watched. But obviously, there's a lot of stuff that they recovered from this site, and Tori is also saying the opposite. So they're trying to figure out how Brian fits into this crime. In this later interview, Brian admits that he did in fact stab Cassie in the leg and the chest. So it was at this point that both Brian and Tori are charged with first-degree murder as well as conspiracy to commit murder.
Hey, wait, so the boyfriend had no idea that his friends would all be like this?
No idea.
That's so sad.
So I will go into what is happening here. So what it was is Brian and Tori were friends from school and they had bonded over their love for murder and horror. And they used to love horror movies and they both had like a video camera and they would regularly tape, you know, kids at school and they'd regularly tape themselves talking about murder and all that stuff. Like this is how they'd bonded. This is how their friendship like really blossomed over murder and horror. You know how at the site a videotape was recovered? Well, this videotape pretty much shows how messed up these two boys were. They would regularly talk about killing people. They would talk about how they admired the Columbine shooters. They would talk about how much they loved the Scream movie. And this murder has been dubbed the Scream murder because they were trying to imitate the whole movie. These videotapes also revealed they had tried to kill people at least 8 times prior but had failed.
Oh, really? Different people?
Yes. Yes. So their original plan was that they wanted to kill people from their school. So they had tried to kill 8 other classmates before Cassie.
Wait, and the other classmates thought that, like, they didn't know it was happening? Like, how did they fail?
They would either, like, so their aim was to get them when they were home alone, but they tried, obviously, to kill them before, and either they weren't home alone or their parents came home or it just didn't work out.
Wow.
And it was also revealed during the trial that they wanted to kill both Matt and Cassie, but because Matt had left, that just left Cassie alone.
I feel like, though, if Matt was there, then they might have had a fighting chance, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So there's a huge amount of their videotape still on YouTube that you can watch. And, you know, the day of the murder, they're videoing Cassie. They're talking about what they want to do. Like, it's really, really messed up. It is available on YouTube if you do feel like watching it. But, Karina, I've sent you a small excerpt of the tape that I want you to listen to now. And this is mainly recorded after they killed Cassie. So if you want to play it now.
Okay.
Listen to what they talk about.
There should be no law against killing people. I know it's a wrong thing, but hell, you restrict somebody from it, they're going to want it more.
We found our victim, and sad as it may be, she's our friend. But you know what? We all have to make sacrifices. Our first victim is going to be Cassie Stoddard. She's going to be alone in a big, dark house out in the middle of nowhere. How perfect can you get? I mean, like, holy shit, dude.
I'm horny just thinking about it.
Hell yeah. It was 9:50, September 22nd, 2006. We know there's lots of doors. There's lots of places to hide. I locked the back doors. That's all I locked. Now we just gotta wait.
I just killed Cassie. We just left her house. This is not a fucking joke.
I'm shaking.
I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body just disappear. Dude, killed Cassie. Oh, fuck. That felt like fucking real. I mean, it went by so fast.
Shut the fuck up. We gotta get our act straight.
Okay.
Oh my goodness, Lockie. That actually gave me chills.
And so they're really messed up, boys. Really messed up, boys.
Yeah. You know what, though? I can see how they think that they're, like, the Scream guys. Like, especially in the first, what's it called? The first movie. You know, like, that Stewie. Like, that's how they're, like, talking. Like, yeah. Stew. Like, that's exactly how they're talking. Like, and Billy. Like, they're just, like, so messed up.
Very messed up. And these tapes really, like, this was the nail in the coffin for them, I think, being charged, because it showed that they had absolutely no remorse, that if they weren't captured, they were probably going to keep killing, because 100%. They had this whole aim of wanting to kill everyone at their school. If you listen to the whole kind of 30-minute audio that's up on YouTube, they say things in the tape like, unfortunately, we have the grueling task of killing our friends. They say, I'm sorry to Cassie's family, but she has to be the one to die. We have to stick with our plan. They say things like, we're sick psychopaths who get pleasure out of killing people. And then obviously in that excerpt that you just listened to, they say things like, oh, I'm horny just thinking about it. Like, really messed up kids, right?
That is just unbelievable. And the scariest thing of all is they're kids, Lockie.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're also 16. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, do they, like, you know when they were in the interrogation and stuff, like, they had no sympathy for the families? Like, are they just cold-hearted? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I'll talk about what they're like now because, obviously, this was 2006.
Yeah.
I'll get to that in a moment. So it was revealed in the trial as well that the pair actually had a death list, which they called it a death list, and it was like a list of potential victims that they could kill, and they made this list in the school library, like at school. And it also was revealed, like I mentioned, they really aspired to be the Columbine shooters, like they were who they looked up to, and Scream was their favorite horror movie. So this whole, like, obviously the Scream movie is about two guys that kill all their classmates from school when they're home alone. And that was their whole thing. Like, that's what they wanted to do, to go into people's houses when they're home alone and kill them. So following their trial, both Brian and Tori were sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. And they are both being held at the Idaho State Correctional Facility. To this day, Brian has shown remorse for what he has done. He's apologized to Cassie and Cassie's family, and he knows, like, you know, I did something wrong and this is where I deserve to be. Mm. Tori, on the other hand, still maintains his innocence.
He says
that Brian did it all and he was just, you know, he was manipulated to come along. His parents also agree with him and think he's innocent.
No, they don't, Lockie.
Yep.
What
yep,
the heck? Even done. After this footage.
Yep. Even after evidence. The tapes. Yep. Yep. So his parents and him have done interviews where they say that, you know, like, he's innocent and, you know, he shouldn't be where he is and all of this stuff.
They're actually delusional. Yeah.
Absolutely delusional. And like I mentioned, they're still obviously held in jail. Both Brian and Tori have appealed their convictions. Brian has filed an appeal over ineffective assistance of counsel with a few things that happened in the trial. Tori, however, has appealed because the state of Idaho had since passed a law saying anyone under the age of 18 can't be sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. And he says, well, my sentence shouldn't still be valid. However, this appeal has been denied.
Good. Hey, do we know if they're together, like in the same prison?
I think they're in the same prison, but I don't think they're, like, friends anymore. I think they turned against each other.
Yeah.
Cassie's family have obviously been very affected by what happened. The 13-year-old cousin that discovered her has had multiple mental breakdowns and is suicidal. Like, she is really messed up from discovering the body. Her aunt and uncle never returned to their house. And they have tried, like they tried to sell it immediately. And because it's a small town, no one obviously wanted to buy the house. So they've struggled with that. And Cassie's family also have tried to sue the school system because it's reported that Tori and Brian would talk about this stuff openly at school all the time. And they believe that the school should have done something to stop this behavior.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were successful in that lawsuit, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the school's really responsible. Like,
yeah, it's a tough one. It's actually a tough one. I mean, if they're talking about it openly, but think about how many, like, if you could get people, like, in trouble or reported for talking about murders, like, we do that at work. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yes. Exactly.
It's such a, like, thin line. Like, it's crazy. But I guess they're obviously on a different level and they're actually talking about killing people, not just, like, Scream's their favorite scary movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's the case. It's one I thought that you would get freaked out by because I know how you feel about being home alone. And like, this is like any, like Cassie was their friend, but because it just worked that she was home alone, that was just the way the cookie crumbled. Like, you know, there's nothing she could have done to save herself. There's nothing Matt could have done to save her. Like, it was just a choice they made and they didn't care that they were friends with her.
That is so scary. It's scary on a different level, you know, because obviously they know, like, she's known to them, they're friends, and they specifically targeted her just because she was home alone.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't her, it would have been someone else, like, at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So in the tapes, it was actually revealed who they targeted before, which hasn't been released, but those people now know.
Oh,
that it could have been them, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, that's the case of Cassie Jo Stoddart.
That is so sad, Lockie. And hopefully these guys rot in hell and, like, literally just never get let out of there.
Yep. So if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at Caffeine Crime and Canines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimeandcanines.
And we would love to hear about what you thought about the last two episodes. Like, if you like Lockie and I telling each other stories without having any idea, like what we're talking about, like one of us sort of unknown to the case, let us know what you think. Send us a DM on Instagram. And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.